Welcome to another episode of the Untangling Web3 podcast. Today's guest, Priyanka Kamath, is a visionary technologist and entrepreneur. From leading AppSec at a Fortune 500 company to launching an AI-powered skill engine with Amazon Education India, her journey spans corporate innovation and startup process. With tech consulting experience at Novartis, the World Bank, and PepsiCo, Priyanka has shaped automation and cybersecurity strategies for applications valued over $600 million. She's also the force behind initiatives like 100 Girls in Blockchain and Dankanya, driving skill equity and inclusivity in tech. Today, we're going to be discussing the concept of decentralization and skilling. So welcome to the show, Priyanka.
Hi, Alec and Jack. It's been an absolute delight to finally make it to your show. I know we've been trying to get our schedules aligned from the airports, from the plane, and here we are finally. It's going to be a beautiful episode, unraveling a lot of plot twists and turns, especially about my startup 100 Giga and how we've arrived at decentralization and skilling for emerging economies from my home country, India.
Yeah, let me say, my schedule was completely empty. It's Priyanka's schedule that is very busy, but we finally got her in here and I'm super excited. You sent the topic decentralization and skilling and I was like, what the hell is decentralization and skilling? You know, we're a Web3 podcast. We started in the early days like Bitcoin and we're like, okay, I think we have a good understanding of what decentralization means. It's very well applied to cryptocurrency, blockchains, all this type of thing. And then you throw a spanner in the works and you're like, decentralization and skilling. So you're going to have to explain to us, our audience, everyone, what is decentralization and skilling?
Whoa, okay, Alec, that was like first curveball with, you know, so much to unpack. But hey, again, you know, I've been trying to get the decentralization to 1.5 billion. So maybe now you know why I was so busy. So, you know, everyone thinks of blockchain in the DeFi terms, which is great. Yes, the number one use case. And yes, we need to dismantle societal systems with, you know, the power in our own hands with our, you know, currency that we approve the value for. But when it comes to skilling terms, especially in a country like India, we are a three-tiered nation. There's India 1, India 2, India 3. I'm privileged to be in the top 1% of India 1, where I have access to world-class education resources and I'm able to pave my own way of my career trajectory. However, India 2, India 3, this forms the majority. You know, India 1 is just like 10 million and there's probably 50 million in India 2. India 3 is about 120 million. So though there is so much of bureaucracy, red tape, caste system that the societal conditioning of the India 2 and India 3 does not allow them to come to India 1. Just because there is especially, you know, the poverty that you see around, the socioeconomic disparity that is right in your face here, when you just step out of home and you see little children on the streets, you know, like having bowls out there for food and, you know, basic resources, which are 75% people still living below 2 cents. This is where we are trying to reach. And how we get there is not by selling education, because that's been quite prevalent. You do see that, hey, look, the bigger ticket you have, the bigger money you throw at, you're able to get into these quality schools, most of it. And of course, we have that creme de la creme, 0.01% that gets into the Ivy Leagues, the MITs of India, the Stanfords of India. But what about the rest?
Okay, India, you know, huge country. And the point you're making there is it's really difficult to manage in a centralized way all these people with completely different life experiences, completely different needs from different socioeconomic backgrounds. And you're saying to do that in a centralized way is incredibly difficult and not the right way of doing it. Is that the point that you're making there?
Alec, you got that right. Well, yes, we have systems, we have structures. There's an education system that, you know, pans down to 50,000 colleges are out there, but not everyone gets that college education just because they even haven't got the foundational education due to lack of resources. There is no internet, there's lack of infra. You are stuck in an environment which only allows you to give you a basic phone, 2 gigs for 2 cents. And what can you learn from that one phone? And this is where we come into picture, where we're building lightweight, mobile first. For now, we start with apps, and you know, we do see it transitioning into dApps as we go further. We are bringing through voice inputs, world-class educational resources. So this could be bundling up, you know, Stanford-like courses, quality courses into different languages, which is 22 languages, 1600 dialects, with the kind of API services that are present now, thanks to the conversational AI models that are just advancing rapidly. And all of this actually gets permeated through their phones at the moment. As we see technology evolving, we are trying to get low fidelity models that can actually provide an immersive learning education right at the click of a button, where you're able to enter into a Stanford class right at, you know, in the lawn of your village or in the courtyard of your village. And this person doesn't need to sell a kidney to, you know, get to higher education, if I may. Like, you know, sometimes I don't think I'm even like kidding about this, because there have been instances of that. So this is exactly where we work with the Holy Union of academia, governance, and industries to pool in our resources together and permeate these kind of lightweight mobile first apps that actually provide everything from your financial literacy building, your roadblocks for building scholarships, and that scholarships will give you skill incentives that lock further opportunities for you. Mm-hmm. So I'll just take a pause if you have questions.
Yeah,
I'm doing a pitch to a VC.
thanks, Branka. I really like that description. I think, you know, you're getting into the heart of something I think a lot of us have experienced and seen over the last 5, 10, maybe even longer years now. The impact of technology on education and upskilling or skilling, how do we get the right skills, the right knowledge in the hands of the next generations? You know, it's been something that's completely changed in the last few years, because, you know, whether that's just the prevalence of information online, the use of, you know, YouTube as essentially an open source university now, right? You can learn about pretty much anything you want on YouTube. You've also got, you know, some of the more emerging technologies like AR, VR for kind of those immersive educational experiences. I know, for example, I think that lots of dentists now are actually being trained in augmented reality, and obviously people who fly planes kind of always have, in a sense, for a long time now. But I haven't actually seen many people talking about this idea of decentralization, which is, you know, it's a technological concept in a way. It's obviously also a kind of philosophical, societal question as well. But it's obviously tied quite deeply into blockchain. I think that's why a lot of people know the word decentralization. So how would you describe the actual kind of, what are the principles of decentralizing skilling and how people get skills? Because that's something I think a lot of people might not be too familiar with and would like to know.
You said it, Jack. I'm glad that you resonate at this level where you've actually felt this in your life as well. So it technically stands on the three pillars of product, people, and processes. We've niched it down to bring this quality app to 23 million girls dropping out of schools due to lack of infrastructure. This, of course, you know, behind the scenes, it is a digital ledger. So we dismantle the power from one centralized authority, and there's actually any kind of transaction that takes place, it is with the validators on the node. However, on the surface, you will not have any kind of, you know, like a digital wallet to log in, or you will not have those kind of barriers to entry. All you would need to do is, you know, have a basic sign-in. Again, as technology evolves, we do feel these barriers will reduce, and Pepsi will have its grandma moment that we're all waiting for. So when this the people, like I said, are these 23 million girls who are dropping out of schools due to lack of infra. The process is technically automized through the smart contract mechanism, which takes you from one transaction to other, where you log in, you build your portfolio, you build your skill portfolio technically, and you want to like decide, hey, look, these are the modules that I want to learn in financial literacy, how to build a basic stock portfolio, how to do ETFs, how to build scholarship funds, avail them from the state government that you're a part of, and kind of start building your road to your wealth from the app itself. And the more you try to interact, you build a skill profile score, and that score then unlocks different job opportunities for you. Now, in today's times, this is not possible because everywhere there is some kind of bureaucracy, or it's about who knows who, or do you know that referral person, and you know that the referral person gets you the job, and do you have the exposure, visibility? But what about these 23 million girls who do not have that snazzy profile or exposure to the city-led upbringing that we all have? So this is why it is super crucial to put in systemic mechanisms that are driven by data, that are driven by autonomous ways, that actually give a transparent way for them to participate in the workforce as an equal participant, as much as somebody who's born and bred in the city.
That's a really good point, Brian, because me and Jack have talked about this previously, like the amount of things on LinkedIn, on someone's CV, where they say, I've got a degree from this place. And you're like, no one's ever verifying that. That's not what, it takes me like 2 weeks to speak to my university and get like any kind of proof. Like they're never going to verify these credentials. So it's quite a cool thing you're talking about there, and quite a powerful thing, especially in a country like India with so many people where education is so important. I wonder, so you said you mentioned smart contracts there. Could you talk us through the app itself? So you said that it's an app right now, but you're looking at maybe moving to a D-app in the future. How did like smart contracts kind of come into that? Can you explain like the basic setup for it?
You said it, Alex. So yes, India is huge. The diversity, disparity, socioeconomic, you know, divide is huge. So we do need these mechanisms. When I say right now it's an app, it's built on Web2 architecture. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, it's a lightweight, mobile first, digitally native driven application on built on Claude Anthropic. So the conversational bot is kind of having still the Western Hemisphere data sets. We are going into Indian-centric LLM now, the large language model actually, you know, extracts data from the government databases which are licensed. These are all, again, you know, within our own territory, whatever we have signed contracts with. That piece where we are integrating LLMs for multilingual, tenants that need to be on the platform, extract data, and then, you know, build their skill profile with us right from the age of 12. That is happening right now in a very Web2 manner. So there's no digital ledger that is seeing, hey, look, how many transactions or how many tokens have been used by this particular person on certain queries. Then we move on to the Web3, which is like in the horizon, maybe the first quarter of 2025 is when, you know, I will get to decide to roll out. The first access that comes out to our 80,000 strong community, thanks to our good folks at South Asian Women in Technology, we have access to enroll our products to 80,000, soon about to hit 100K. So the 100 giga actually turns into 100K, thanks to Savit. We will be rolling out skill rewards in terms of how well this person has, say, you know, has had the green stash on GitHub, or how many projects this person has done in terms of sustainability, volunteering, going to their local school, teaching, just all of that counting into the holistic profile. So for every transaction, we do need a digital record that is on the ledger. So these kind of, you know, transactions need to be on blockchain, and the rewards that come out will also be in terms of crypto. So if they want to off-ramp, they can off-ramp into fiat, and that kind of goes into their scholarship money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a really good overview. I wonder, because we're talking about a lot of some of the more technical side of things, right? We're getting into LLMs, we're talking about tokens and things like that. And I think we should dig into each of those in a little bit more detail. But at a high level, if people listening to this for the first time and maybe not so initiated, they might be wondering, okay, how does this system compare with, you know, a Coursera or a Skillshare where I'd normally go to upskill myself? How is that changing, and what's the benefit of the decentralized model over those things that I already know? I wonder, you know, how would you describe that to someone who is kind of very, very new to all this stuff?
Wow, I'm so glad you asked that, Jack. We get asked this question all the time. We are in fact LinkedIn, but, you know, better, because this 80,000 thriving community of female forces lifting you up, having gone through the same cycle of socioeconomic strata, all the barriers that I've been to, and you know, you will not get this kind of a niche downsizing where people are able to solve your problems based on the real-time experiences. Community, like that is number one. Second is the profile scoring that happens, right? These are data-driven decisions you can make that I don't think a Coursera can tell you if you have come on board with them with a 60% profile skill score and now you are at a 97% skill score. It's still that one skill that you're picking up from Coursera, and there's no tangible way of knowing, have you really learned? Maybe there's just one exam or quiz that you've taken, right? So what we give, you know, thanks to our partnerships, it is a holistic profile where the interactions with the community members, the projects, the experiential learning, that is where the holy grail lies. The experiential learning, the projects that you've built, the projects that have been pushed onto production. Well, yes, there will be a lot of POCs, but has the POC gone to production? That is what probably counts more for your skill reward. So then we spike up your skill score all the way from 60% to, you know, the more complexities you are able to overcome, that skill scoring gets higher. And that will unlock the job profiles, internships, and of course, you know, speaking opportunities and whatnot. So this is how we go about. So Coursera is probably one module in all of the, you know, the gigaverse, if I may. And it's just one component there. Yeah.
That's cool. That's very cool. Like, I'm excited to see this when it comes out. Like, talking about like the roadmap, the idea of rewards, like, it's one of the big questions I imagine a lot of governments are facing is, how do you make education kind of more, not intuitive on the one hand, but also more interesting? How do you get people passionate about learning? And the word is kind of overused, I think, but we still use it because it makes sense to a lot of people. Gamification, right? It's talk about gamification constantly. Today's episode is sponsored by the VeChain Foundation.
Now, we often talk about how emerging technologies like blockchain have the potential to revolutionize sustainability. And VeChain is at the forefront of this green movement with initiatives like VBetterDAO. Let's take a closer look.
Imagine tracking small actions, like recycling, at low cost, making them valuable assets. These verified records build a massive collective impact, benefiting people through their own actions. Sound a bit complex, but VeChain made it fun. Explore our apps at vbetter.com.
VeChain's goal is to power a new era of sustainable solutions. So if you've got an app idea or just want to earn rewards for small, sustainable actions every day, go check out vbetterdao.com to find out more. And now, back to the show. Could you, I know it's not like something's going to be delivered anytime soon, but it's on the roadmap. Could you talk about this skill rewards and how you're going to try and reward people for learning and what role you think that'll play in the overall kind of concept of this project?
Wow. I mean, I've been through this problem myself, especially, you know, having worked in corporate America for 7 years, coming home in the pandemic and not wanting to do a corporate job, but finally having to start my own, you know, venture. I was like, how do I even skill up on entrepreneurial side of things? But I've always been an engineer. How do I take up that financial 101 course in revenue models and, you know, budgeting and running on shifting different gears with venture capitalists? So when I was taking these courses, the retention rate of each course, like I probably was at 35%, which is a netted average for everyone taking online courses. This was the biggest problem, guys, and you will not believe this. So I went out and I was like, you know what? This was way before AI happened. This was like 2021. I mean, AI was always there from 1960s, but it is having its inflection point now. But before that, I was like, how do we reach out with this immersive learning techniques? Maybe I build an AI avatar called Pringsatron, and my kiddos and the students can actually go to Pringsatron and learn whatever they want to in their pace and their medium, the language of their choice, which I probably know 5 languages, but India has, you know, 27 more. So this is where it started. And I'm so glad I took that route when I came in the pandemic, because that avatar was bought by a Yacht Club member, God bless. And that's how I earned my first Ethereum. And that's how I got into the incredible ecosystem. Thank you, Vitalik, for just opening up so many use cases for us to work on. So that's, I was like, hey, look, if I can learn these mechanisms and actually take it to my students, even better, because they might not be great at IT or like programming. They're good at, say, jewelry making, soap making, you know, arts and crafts. They can convert any skill they want to in and make a, you know, living, a decent living. And at that point, I was mostly working with a lot of students from the shelter home. And the only goal I had was, hey, look, they need a dignified life and they need to come out of the shelter homes as soon as possible. So we actually started with small projects, learning by doing projects, putting them on OpenSea marketplace, trying to see if we have a new liquidity pool through the Silicon Valley folks and help them buy their art, help them buy their, you know, jewelry, soaps and whatnot. So while there was a lot of interest and yes, we could, but they always needed someone who was very well adapted with the Web3 ecosystem to be there. So we thought, okay, maybe this is not a sustainable way, right, to get into the bottom billion of India, but it's a start. So then we thought, hey, look, let's just take the skill rewards in terms of Lenovo laptops. So that's what we did. Like we went to Tech Mahindra, good folks at Tech Mahindra, got them refurbished laptops, did our first smart contract cohorts with these girls. They went on and built some fabulous stuff for farmers. We call it the Farmer Profitability Lab. I mean, this is a story again for ages. There are 1,000 farmers in rural India harvesting mangoes. So just optimizing the entire supply chain. These are all women farmers. So their data was coming from scattered places. There were Excel sheets, Zoho books, like QuickBooks in US, and NoSQL. So we had to like merge all of these into data pipelines, get them on a digital ledger and make sure that the middlemen were eliminated. So the profitability came back to these farmers. And all these by 17 to 21 year old bright girls. So that was something that actually got us to Token 2049 and got us awarded there. So kudos to Sandy Carter. If you're listening, Sandy, thank you. You put us on the global map. She is the CEO of Unstoppable Web, and we absolutely love her for identifying, actually being there on demo day and giving us all good mojo. So this is how we started. And now the skill rewards are going to go on to digital ledgers. Before we come up with our own coin, you know, launch our own ICO, we're definitely looking at Solana. If you have good folks at Solana, please let them know that there's a girl trying to solve problems for 23 million girls in India. We'd love to talk to Raj Gokul and get Solana coins out there for each of the projects that are going to production.
Well, Priyanka, it's funny you mentioned Sandy. We've had Sandy on the show before. We can confirm. We know how great she is, right? She's awesome. So she'll be glad to. I'm sure she's a listener as well as just being a guest. So I'm sure she'll see this and love that.
But we love you.
The lights are gone.
Okay. Eagle-eyed viewers will notice that there's been a change in Priyanka's background. That's because, you know, Priyanka's mum has just told her it's time for bed. So we're gonna keep this as concise and as possible. But I do want to highlight, just, you know, while we're on this topic, Priyanka, I do love two things that really stood out to me as you described the use of this kind of token reward system. Is, you know, number one, this problem of retention is definitely something that resonates with me. I am a bit of a course hoarder. I've, you know, bought many courses, got 20% through them, and then just moved on to the next one. It's a bit like how I am with reading books. I just can't seem to get focused. And retention is a big problem, you know, for people learning and for the platforms themselves. And you also mentioned the value of, you know, skilling in very kind of wide range of areas, right? So not just the kind of traditional academic skills or maybe code based, but also more practical things, which I think is really important. You know, Alec and I are both from the UK. I think one of the things that, you know, our system here struggles with is that there's not enough emphasis put on those types of skills. So it's really nice that you're seeing ways to use incentives like you're doing to tackle those. So that's really good. I would like to know a little bit more about, you know, when we talk about, okay, there's a great vision here with decentralizing the world of skilling. What are the big kind of issues and challenges with that? Because whenever you decentralize something, you kind of take power a little bit away from an existing kind of centralized provider, right? That's the person we're competing with. So what do you see as the big challenges and barriers to you to scaling this, to bringing it to, you know, the kind of billions of young people that you want this system to go to?
Wow, that is pretty loaded. I know, and it just ironically comes after that burst of laughter we've all had. Wow, where do I even begin with this one? Because here, what we're actually trying to dismantle is the bureaucracy and red tape that happens at the college like admission level, where you know there is like freebies being doled out by governments, but still these academic organizations do go and, you know, like charge some more, like just double their income and just build wealth based on the seats that they show are available for certain students. But hey, look, the government is already paying you. Why are you charging these students? Right. And that's where the whole problem starts. Again, there's like this vicious cycle where there's student debts and they can't get out of, you know, college without the debt. Now they need a job, and with the AI volatility in the job, they don't, they're not able to land that job. So it's just sad to see this vicious cycle going. So we were like, hey, look, chuck off that, like, just let's start building our own governance model. This is why Web3 folks, you know, just resonate with my soul and body and mind. Like, we build our own governance models, and here you come on, we build a skill economy based on the skills you're picking up. You are actually able to unlock your own success. You don't have to depend on the volatility of job markets. You don't have to depend on these academic organizations that try to, you know, provide education, but ultimately it's just the same archaic educational ways that they are following. And it's just, you know, a never-ending loop. And somewhere I think with Web3 we have a new paradigm to dismantle these societal systems, and we're seeing this in the form of, you know, hackathons on Discords and 3-month innovation boot camps. We've done like 4 cohorts within the innovation bootcamp space, where our girls have gone on to go work with Google, Microsoft, Goldman Sachs, and none of these girls technically have had their master's degree or, as I say, grad school degree. So it's all about the skills and putting your mind to use on that learning and experiential project.
I'm glad you brought up the skills there. We've talked repeatedly about the involvement of AI in this application. I feel like almost every app in the world now has some form of AI and will need to stay competitive. But like, there's 2 points to this. I'll go into the first one. First of all, is, you know, with AI changing, you know, you're obviously doing an educational course, and the whole point of education is to give the next generation or the current generation the skill set they need to be competitive and productive, you know, in the economy and business in the world going forward. But with things like AI changing and evolving so, so quickly, how do you make sure that the skill set that you're teaching and people are learning are relevant, right? Because it seems like every other day now, there's a new AI application that just makes an entire kind of sector redundant, basically. What do you do to kind of keep competitive with that?
Wow. I mean, forget about the students, like just me keeping up with LLMs now getting into multimodals, and 2025 is going to be the year of agentic workflows. I'm already sweating about it. So it is a challenge. I mean, this is exactly where we try to bring the personalized AI mechanisms. I was just talking to you about the lightweight app that we built with voice input. So you, based on your profiling, your knowledge accumulation, and how you build the profile, right, just based on the geographical location you come, how much of skills you've picked up so far, the AI is going to pick up your level of learning and then put you into those benchmarks of intermediate, beginner, advanced, and actually let you know, hey, look, do you need to get on to the next big LLM, or do you need to learn more about the tokenizer benchmarks, or do you just need to get on to building agentic workflows with responsible AI? So it is, again, you know, the whole mantra here is to learn AI with AI. So through these immersive personalized mechanisms, again, you know, the job board also is AI powered. So based on the number of skills in the database to the vector embeddings that we have for the different jobs, it will match you through that particular job. So it's all AI led, it's all data driven led. And that's how we go about.
That's really cool. Because I was just thinking, like you just said, you said that really nice line of like, it's an AI problem that can be solved with AI. Mm. And there's no way in hell that centralized models, you know, the UK government is going to be able to keep up and make sure that every year they update the education system for all the many, you know, millions of kids to keep up with how AI is just destroying certain fields left, right, and center, right? And then I was like, okay, but how do you ensure that this is actually accurate? And if AI is constantly updating the courses and making things available basically on new, you know, concepts that are coming out, new fields that are kind of emerging because of AI, how do you do that? And you're saying that you do it right now by looking at the jobs that are being posted and saying, okay, these are the skills that are most relevant. Let's now create modules, courses to facilitate that. Is that what you're doing in the app right now?
That is true. So I want to bifurcate this into two baggers, if I may say, because we do want to be sustainable. We do want to go ahead, make that long lasting brand for ourselves with 100 giga. So the ones who can afford to actually get on the subscription economy and come build their job profiles with us, skill profiles with us, unlock opportunities. We have a different SaaS platform for that. And you have all these different micro communities where you can learn everything from confidence building to solo entrepreneurship to Python, right? So all of that is there. Again, thanks to our partnerships, Savith and Kaleido, I do have to give them a huge shout out. And tomorrow we have that big meeting also, where we do have some very exciting partnerships in line. One of that might turn out to be NVIDIA. So we are really rooting for that one. So hopefully, those kind of niche products are being able to be brought to the doorstep of the student right at the comfort of their house through that particular SaaS platform. So we do it through Discord, webinars, sessions, everything on that SaaS platform. Now, the one that I told about the lightweight, mobile first, voice input based learning, that is exclusively for the bottom billion, the girls who cannot afford to pay, who do not have the infrastructure. So this, through the help of the government, we're able to disseminate to government schools and, you know, have the proliferation to the nook and corners of the country. So that is completely free.
Okay.
That's on a pro bono basis.
Yeah, that it's such an exciting pipeline you've got. And I really hope, all these things do come to fruition, because again, the vision of what you're trying to do, I think, is truly noble. And there is, in my opinion, virtually nothing more important than education, than giving the population the skills they need of the, every country and the world more largely. I think it's such a vital thing, and it's such a good use of the tools and technologies we have in Web3. So yeah, I'm really excited. And, you're kind of looking towards the future and I'm already there. And as we get to the kind of the closing part of this episode, I just want to ask you, let's say we're looking 10 years in the future, right? At the global economy, at the way people learn. Let's say this decentralized model for skilling does take hold and you get much, much kind of wider global adoption, fingers crossed, exactly. So what does that world look like to you? What do you think the kind of impact will be on a future generation, and how will things be different, let's say, if this does come to fruition?
Wow. Amen. Like, I'm manifesting what you said right now, Jack. Not just emerging economies, but I'm pretty sure even in dominant countries like America, we do have this problem of student debt, and folks resort to community colleges despite having good credentials and whatnot. So I do see a debt-free world. That's how I can put it simply, where students come and build on the skills that they've picked up. You don't have to be determined by the volatility of jobs. Like right now, the most lucrative job looks like being an AI engineer, prompt engineer, or ethical AI, architect. But I do see a day where the farmers are able to sell their produce on a marketplace that they have built. They don't need to depend on a web developer or a Shopify, or a third party to actually sell their produce. So it's about having a skill-based economy where everyone is an equal participant. Nobody is put in these barriers of tech, non-tech, and just way too many divides that we see. I also see a humanities student get paid equally as a software grad, and nobody should be you know, penalized for like choosing a subject of their choice, right? I really love philosophy, and somewhere I'm really glad that Web3 kind of binds these worlds of philosophy, tech, and finance. It's just the perfect holy grail. And if not for Web3, I didn't know where to put my philosophical instincts and where do I go, like write a book, right? So this is where I see, like, you know, every skill is given its due, and every person with, no matter coming from which background, humanities, arts, tech, is able to earn the income and have to define living.
I really love that, Priyanka. And we often say that, you know, this podcast started off as a tech podcast, and more it becomes a philosophy podcast because Web3 really does encapsulate so much of both. And I just want to say, like, this is one of the coolest projects we've heard about. Like, it's such a Web3, like a pure Web3 concept. I know that right now you're doing like the first bit, like the major bit, just getting users on a Web2 fashion or Web2 infrastructure. But it has so many potential components that you're talking about that are going to make it such a Web3 kind of conglomerate of things, like the AI aspect, which is completely essential to this stuff, the decentralization, you know, potentially rewarding people in crypto, micro incentives, verifiable credentials, digital identity. Like, it really is a holy grail of so many different things. That's why I'm so excited to see this kind of be the success that it's inevitably going to be. And I think this kind of area is going to become so important as governments try to wrestle with AI and what it means for the workforce of the future when it's constantly changing and governments and regulation cannot keep up with the pace of AI. Like you say, AI is the only real solution to that. So this is such a powerful tool. I'm so excited to see it out in the world. And yeah, I've learned so much. So thank you for coming on the show. And all that's left to say is thank you for listening wherever you may be, and join us next time to untangle a little more of Web3. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Untangling Web3.
Don't forget to send us your thoughts, questions, and comments on social media. And be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast provider to catch the next episode. See you next time to untangle a little bit more of Web3.
The views we express here are our own and do not reflect the views of our employers.